Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The history of television is a history of failure.
For every television series that lasted years and years, there were dozens that lasted only one season. Less.
But did they deserve to die? Or were they canceled too soon?
And welcome back to Cancelled Too Soon, the scary podcast where we review television series that lasted only one season or less. My name is William Bibbiani. I am a film critic. I write for The Wrap. Everybody calls me Bibbs.
Hey, Bibbs, what is a skeleton's favorite snack? It's Scary Vember.
Sorry, that is one of the funniest things. I forgot to. Sure. I usually watch that at Halloween. I forgot this. Just look up.
I think our listeners know what we're talking. It's a rather popular internet meme.
If somehow you missed it, just look up the skeleton's favorite snack video. It's the funniest damn thing. Anyway.
But my name is Whitney Seibold. Yes. I'm a senior staff writer over at Slash Film, and this is our last hit of Scary-tober in Scary-vember.
Maybe,
or it's just, a horror.
It's just Scary-vember. We like to, throughout the month of October, do horror stuff because it's the internet, and that's what we do here at the internet.
October is the month we celebrate Halloween, and a lot of people in America have watched horror movies all October.
But here's the thing: people don't necessarily change their whole program all October. Like your accountant doesn't only do like scary accounting in October.
Oh, but they might like decorate their office with pumpkins and ghosts and that kind of thing.
A lot of shows, a lot of podcasts step up their horror programming, and we like to do that for an event we call Scary-tober. But Scary-tober got away from us because the show we wanted to do became suddenly unavailable. We kind of waited for it a little bit, and then we waited too long, and then life got in the way, and then we were going to do an episode last week, and then the world fell down some steps.
We had to...
it's been rough.
Like Father Karras on those stairs. Yeah.
But we're back. We're back, and it's a bit of a change of plan. We were going to do an anthology series called Dark Room. We might get to that one day. It's been on my to-do list for a while, but in the interim... I was reading about a really interesting, forgotten chapter of television history. So this week on Cancel Too Soon, we're going to be talking about a series that almost doesn't exist. It came very, very close to being literally erased forever.
It was 5/6 missing.
Yes. There were 6 episodes, and all of them were deleted or erased or taped over because... people don't care about art.
Well, I don't know about art, but television certainly not. Well, the idea was a lot of TV stations had limited equipment, and they filmed the show. They needed to fill their time slot.
Right.
They would broadcast it, and once it was broadcast, they were done. So they would reuse the tapes and tape over the old shows.
But that's not unique to television. In fact, one of the reasons why the majority of silent cinema does not exist is because the people who owned it stopped caring about preserving it.
It's many made times for really fragile equipment. That's a big issue.
That's also a part of it as well. But also, you know, sometimes it was like literally melted down. Mm. Like the films of Georges Méliès were melted down to make guitar picks.
Yep.
So it's a miracle. The ones that we have of those that exist is also a miracle. The original director's cut of The Magnificent Ambersons was like in a vault for a little bit. And then they decided, we need more vault space. So they just burned some stuff.
Yeah.
And we're seeing this today. Video games, a significant portion of all of the early video games are either not available or not legally available.
Or they're on older formats, which they're not updating for the newer formats.
Yeah. And also the question of who owns the rights makes having them at all kind of difficult. And so we're losing these things.
It's egregious in the streaming era as well.
Yeah.
There's a rather expensive TV series based on Ron Howard's movie Willow that came out just last year.
Yeah.
And because the streaming service is more about increasing the stock value of a company more than it is getting people to watch your shows, they don't really care if people watch the shows. I don't think if the ratings are high, great, but the fact is that they just need to put it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so they put out Willow, people saw it, maybe they didn't. People cared, maybe they didn't.
It got good reviews.
Got okay reviews, and then Disney said, okay, we're done.
Yep.
And they pulled it from the service, so it's essentially lost media at this point.
This is what happens when you view the media, the art that you create. And these people are creating it to make money. But when you view it only as content, which I can only say with air quotes...
You can't see the air quotes.
Yeah, but hopefully you can kind of hear it in the inflection. Content. It's just a commodity, and it doesn't have any value unless it's making you money. So if it's not, you throw it away, and that's why only one episode exists of, and I love this preview, Late Night Horror.
And we shall be back at Royal Birkdale for the Alcan Golfer of the Year Championships later in the year. Just before the World Skating Championships, here's a warning from an old friend about something that's going to happen on BBC Two later tonight.
Good evening. Perhaps you remember me, the man in black. I'm here tonight to give you a friendly warning. Do you feel frightened of the dark? Squeamish about blood? Do you, who live alone, sometimes feel that your hairbrush is not quite where you left it on your dressing table? Do you sometimes feel that the trees in a dark wood are not wholly on your side? And you, madam, do you feel that bats are constantly conspiring to secure lodgment in your hair? If you do, I would strongly advise you, as a friend, to avoid this channel late on Fridays for the next few weeks. You see, they're starting a series, a most unpleasant series. Perhaps you're laughing. Perhaps you think you are above being frightened by a television program. In that case, why not switch on BBC Two at 10:55 tonight? Turn out the lights and watch Late Night Horror. But please, don't watch it alone. You never know what might be looking over your shoulder.
So don't say you haven't been warned.
That preview is great.
Hello, man. You didn't get to see him turn into a skeleton.
At the end, he turns into a skeleton. This is really cheesy. Just fade out.
It's like a wire or a rod or something, and his hand lifts up in like this awkward puppety kind of. The skeleton in William Castle's House on Haunted Hill.
Yeah.
Is
more convincing,
more realistic, and moves more naturally.
If that voice sounded familiar, by the way, that was, I think it's, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, Valentine Dial. It might be Valentine Dial.
All right.
He was the man in black, as he introduced himself, who was the host of a BBC horror radio series for many, many years. It was very popular. They even made a movie in the 1950s. And he still had clout, you know, and they kept bringing this back over and over again. So having him introduce this new horror series is like if you brought back to the Crypt Keeper to tell you that Masters of Horror was about to come out. He's not involved, but you've got the seal of approval, which is pretty cool.
Although, I'll say this, watching that ad, that dumb bumper, and also watching Late Night Horror, I suddenly understand Monty Python that much better. Because Monty Python came out very popular among comedy nerds, but Monty Python was actually... the bulk of what they put out was a spoof of BBC television at the time, in the late 60s, which is when this came out, 1968. And how dry and dull it was. The, you know, the way they read these sort of news programs and documentary programs. There was a segment on Monty Python called Storage Jars. But they filmed it in this like really sort of intense, hard hitting way. Like they're playing this really kind of intense, bombastic music, boom, 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 or footage of just glass jars. Nothing interesting about them. But then like Eric Idle would spin around and the camera would zoom in on him. It's like, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Storage Jars. And so we're going to cut to our man in the field, and they cut to Terry Jones out in the field, and there's a little table, storage jars, but there's a war going on behind him. There's, like, bombs dropping. And these ones have, like, ceiling, and we're going to get, like, they're trying to make these things seem really interesting, but it's very dull. And Monty Python was there to send up that kind of dull mannerisms in an attempt to make people interested.
I feel like
they were goosing a lot of that.
I feel like a lot of the stuff that we think of, and granted, Monty Python can be very absurdist, even Dadaist at times, but a lot of the things we here in America think of as just, oh, they're just being silly, is actually a lot more pointed. We just don't get the reference. We get that it's funny, and the timing is funny, and it's certainly very silly, but the actual thing that they're talking about is so unknown to us that we're only getting half the joke.
But
the joke is still great. That's how good Monty Python was. But yeah, and so Valentin Dial, or Valentin Dial, he hosted Appointment with Fear, and check it out. Not all of it's available, but worth doing. But yeah, Late Night Horror. Late Night Horror played on BBC Two. It was a horror anthology series that ran from, hold on, let me get the
dates. Well, just for the 6 weeks.
Just for 6 weeks. It was from April 11th, 1968. Until May 16th, 1968. There were six episodes, and each one told a different tale of terror, as is the classic format of the horror anthology. But what made Late Night Horror special was two things. One, it was in color. And this was still pretty special to do TV in color. And the idea of doing a horror series in color on TV. And a lot of people have black and white TVs. That's the only way you could see it. But if you had color, you would see bright, sparkling colors. And because...
And I had to watch it in black and white.
Well, that's the only way it exists.
Yeah.
So, the originally, the show was aired in bright, beautiful color. The only copy of the only episode that exists is in black and white. And still plays?
And it was culled from an old 16mm print.
Yeah.
And this happens a lot. A TV station will send physical prints of their TV series out to international markets. Mm-hmm. But to save money, they would often strike black and white prints.
Yeah.
Just because it was cheaper to do it at the time.
Yeah.
So sometimes that'll happen. A TV show will be found again on this like cheap 16mm strip that was printed in black and white. Sometimes it was even edited differently. And it was just sitting in some theater vault somewhere.
Yeah.
And when somebody finally finds it again, that's how things get rediscovered.
Well, the other thing that made Late Night Horror pretty novel was because it was in color, they made the decision that it was going to be bloody. They were actually going to push the gore a little bit as far as TV goes. We're actually going to see, you know, gruesomeness, a severed eye, all that kind of stuff, which you could do because it was on late night TV, because it is a horror show, and because it's a novelty value. We're trying to get them. So if you're going to watch our show, you're going to see the gross stuff. And
which was, you mentioned Tales from the Crypt. That was the ethos of Tales from the Crypt as well.
Yeah.
It aired on HBO, and HBO's ethos was, let's push the blood, sex, and cussing as far as we possibly can. This is stuff you can't see on ordinary network TV. So you watch Tales from the Crypt, and it is gratuitously violent. And there's nude scenes that are very clearly written for the gratuity, and that's fine. I think that lends it a kind of a fun exploitation vibe.
Yeah.
That makes it reminiscent of like late night drive-in movies.
The producer sent a direct memo to the staff in 1967 saying, quote, "We must do everything we can from the very beginning to stimulate suspense, tension, atmosphere, potential horror, and horror in all capitals. And also, if there is blood, let's see the blood."
Okay.
Which led to the sort of the legend that the reason why the show was canceled so quickly and never came back was, I think, only re-aired like once, was because it was so gory. Like, yeah, it was too gory. It was like the original creepypasta. Like, people had heard the legends. Like, remember, what was the what was that TV movie from Nickelodeon we saw?
Oh,
it was like something Lane, something.
Sadfield Lane or Lacrimose Lane, something about crying.
Crybaby Lane.
It was called Crybaby Lane.
Which was a horror film that they made for Nickelodeon that was considered kind of too scary for Nickelodeon, but because they like only aired it the one time and people only kind of half remembered it, the legend had come out that it was just horribly, horribly horrifying. Like, just way too intense for children and truly disturbing and violent. And no, just probably a little too creepy for little kids.
Yeah.
We watched it. It's okay. It's actually one of our earliest episodes.
I have a young son. He's 9. And it's difficult to gauge, like, what he's going to be afraid of. Because ordinarily, he's pretty resilient. He's really into, like, horror video games where people, you're, like, stalking through and people with distorted faces leap out at you and that doesn't phase him. But I tried to show him Gremlins 2, one of my favorite movies. And I figured that'd be fun because that's, like, wacky monsters. It's a little bit goofy. There's cartoon sound effects. And by the end of that movie, like, it just erupts into chaos at one point.
Sure.
But, you know, before it erupts into chaos, there's like some scary scenes of like monsters leaping out.
The spider gremlin in that is pretty scary, they sell it as scary.
And the gremlin that turns into the spider, like, it looks like properly monstrous. It's got like red eyes and teeth and
spikes.
And the puppets are really great and they coat them in slime. It's like the special effects are really amazing. And he couldn't too handle much. That. It looked too real to him.
Yeah.
So, he was afraid of those gremlins.
Patton Oswalt had a whole bit about how you never know.
What's going to be scary to a kid?
Yeah, he said he was showing, like, he was, like, watching, like, Schoolhouse Rock with his daughter, and they were talking, you know, these little fun bits about, like, you know, the skeleton, the leg bone is connected to the thigh bone, ha, 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 ha. But then when he turned on the TV to do stuff, it was, like, one shot of the Benicio del Toro Wolfman.
That's right.
Where it was, like, really, really scary, and she looked really shocked, and he was like, oh, God, I've traumatized her for life. And then in the middle of the night, she comes in crying, and it's because of the Schoolhouse Rock cartoon.
Yeah, the skeletons in Schoolhouse Rock scared her more than the Wolfman.
It just made her think, and then as she was going to sleep, she chuckled and said, the dog was wearing a shirt. You never know. You never know what's going
like
to traumatize
a
child.
These kinds of shows that kind of grew a myth around them, that only aired late at night and then vanished forever.
Yeah.
You know that there's somebody out there. There's a British listener who was 10 in 1968 who got to see this, snuck out of bed and late at night. And they are now like a horror filmmaker or a horror author because of this show.
Yeah.
I wish I could have seen the blood.
Yeah.
Because I saw the black and white version.
I'm going to show you a still from the episode we're looking at. Like,
oh, fun. Yeah, there you go.
Blood,
that's
right? Severed hand, a lot of blood everywhere. You know, pretty gory for TV in the 1960s.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, didn't see that level of blood. It's clearly a rubber hand, but whatever.
You only saw it for a second in the actual episode. No. But yeah.
The only episode that survived was called The Corpse Can't Play.
Yeah.
Which is
great title.
Well, I was about to say it's kind of an odd title.
Well, I think it's a great title though, because first off it has corpse in it. So already better. You know, like almost any movie would be improved if you just put like corpse in the title. Like Lilo and Stitch and Corpse. Ooh. Interesting. What are we doing this week, Disney?
And it's very dull. It's a very dull program, because the bulk of the show is adults hanging out in a kitchen, mm-hmm. talking about completely incidental things that rarely relate to what's going on in the next room, where we know mm-hmm. the horror is about to happen. So there's a birthday party going on.
Yes.
Ronnie is the main mm-hmm. boy. And these are British children in the 60s, so they're miserable shits. They're just cruel
they're
to each other.
Yeah, they're mean.
They're really mean, and there's like an element of bullying amongst all of the kids. They're just all bullying each other.
The episode begins with them playing musical chairs, which I think is pretty universal, but just in case anyone is unfamiliar or hasn't played it, is a really banal game.
There's a line of chairs. There's one fewer chairs than there are players. They play music. When the music stops, you sit. If you can't sit, you're out.
Well, the idea is you're walking in a circle, so where you end up is kind of random. And sort of, you know, but one kid kind of gets pushed aside, and he's like, "Hey, no one be violent." And the sort of response is, "Well, what did you expect? We're playing musical chairs."
And I'm like, "You know, the most violent game."
I guess there's some shoving involved, but yeah. So these kids are running around. It's Ronnie's birthday party, and he's just being a holy terror. Listen, one thing I appreciate about the horror genre that most other genres are uncomfortable doing is admitting that children can be awful, especially to each other.
Yeah.
Like, they can just be, like, every Stephen King story that takes place when people are kids always has the worst bully in the world.
Mm.
And if you never had a bully, maybe you think that's a little hyperbolic. If you have had a bully, you know Stephen King understands bullies because they're just that bad. A lot of them are just really, really cruel. And you can point to maybe there's a justification, but sometimes people are just mean.
Well, and I think, what was that documentary short we saw a couple of years ago about the kids who were bullied?
Oh yeah, there was this, what was that? It was about...
It was called, like, My Bully, or When I Was a Bully, something like that.
I'll look it up, but yeah, no, it wasn't even, like, one bully. It was, like, one kid had done something, and so the whole class kind of got punished for it.
Uh-huh.
And then after they were leaving class, everyone in the class...
Mm-hmm.
Bullied this one kid at once.
Yeah, kind of teamed up on him unexpectedly. It wasn't a plan or anything.
Yeah. And violent happened. Like, he didn't die. It was just incredibly cruel. And one of the kids grew up to become a documentarian, and he was remembering this incident, and he was so full of shame that he tried to track everyone down and see what they remembered about it. It was really, really good. I'll look this up, actually, because it's a good documentary.
But I feel like that type of bullying... Like, there are bullies. There are just terrible people. Kids who will pick on other kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like... bullying is a little bit more of a general attitude, and that anybody could become a bully at any minute.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes kids are bullied, sometimes they bully. I think kids are just kind of mean to each other sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
None of it's justified, but I think it's a widespread phenomenon.
When we were bullies.
That
yeah,
was
from
it.
2022.
Yeah, that was a pretty good film.
Very good film. Very good film. We're checking out. Yeah.
So that was the vibe I got from these kids, that they're all kind of bullies.
Yeah,
and it's like they're waiting for their victim to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And lo, he does. Simon appears.
Yes, and
Simon was not invited.
No, and Simon just looks like...
He looks like Clark Kent.
He's got these very thick glasses, very chunky glasses, blonde hair, and he's very polite. Mm. He's almost... suspiciously polite. Like, he's very well behaved. God only knows why he even showed up, honestly, because he clearly isn't welcome. I don't know, maybe his mom dropped him off or something, and
maybe he just wants to make good, try to make friends.
Maybe.
You know?
Well, he clearly puts some effort into it, because he brings Ronnie a present, and the present is a very large remote control car, which, again, in the 1960s is not a cheap gift, and even Ronnie's mom is like, you spent way too much money, you shouldn't have done that. And Ronnie looks at this, I would have wanted a car like that. One of the things I always wanted as a kid was a remote control car, and for whatever reason, they're always just a little too expensive, and my parents never got me one.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, even like a cheap one I never got, until I was like much older. I got one eventually, but like, I bought it myself, basically.
I got a remote control car, but it wasn't one where you could push forward and like steer it around. It only had forward and back.
Yeah.
And when you pressed forward to go forward, when you let go, it would go backward, but the wheels would turn. So you could only do 3-point turns. It could only reverse. It was really a
well, the problem,
kind of an annoying thing.
The problem
to
I had was the one time I was able to get my hands on a remote control car, because it was a cheap one, it had like no traction. So if you put it on a rug, it wouldn't do anything. Because when it came to remote control cars, you had to like, you get what you pay for, basically, at least back in the day. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, he brings up Ronnie this remote control car, and Ronnie looks at this incredibly expensive. It's like getting a kid in Nintendo 64 in 1998. It's like, ooh, how awesome is how you would expect a child to go. But because he got it from Simon, he gives no shits and just drops it and runs off to be with his other friends. Mm. So Simon is already feeling just fucking awful. You're right. We keep cutting back into the kitchen with Mom and Mom's best friend. Mm. And they're making treats, you know, doing whatever. Mm. And they're kind of just talking about how just horrible the children are.
Yeah, Mom is kind of worried about how the children are going to get violent. And she's like kind of trying to keep an eye on the party. Her best friend has clearly had at least 2 more glasses of champagne. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Oh, and she's very, very happy that she doesn't have kids. She's played by Claire Bloom from The Haunting, by the way, which is a good get.
Claire Bloom is
really great actor.
Very prolific, very good British actress.
Yeah. So she's there to provide a counterpoint. And I remember, honestly, this is like a format. I don't know if it was a commercial format in the 60s, but by the 80s, this idea of the kids are doing stuff and then we cut to the parents. Mm. We're just trying to do parent things while the kids are having fun. And the idea is, listen, parents, we get it. Your kids are having fun, but you have to do all the work. That's why we invented Bounty, the quicker picker-upper, or whatever it was. And so it's just like, oh, aren't you worried that the kids spilled grapefruit juice all over your new carpet? That's okay. I've got Bounty. Mm. And I always remember there was this one that was started off with the kids spilling grapefruit juice. And I saw this when I was 9, and even I was mad at the kids. Because, come on, that's a new carpet. And they go, Mom! And the mom goes, that's okay. And the best friend goes, aren't you worried? Like, no, I added the quicker picker-upper. And after she explains the wonders of how paper towels work, we cut back again to the kitchen, and the kids yell, and both the ladies say, that's okay. And I always remember thinking, what if it wasn't something banal? What if it was like, Mom, that's okay. Great, we get to murder the party clown. Mom said it was okay. The nerve is what I'm getting at. So the parents are just kind of rolling their eyes at the children. The children are playing a variety of games. Ronnie keeps coming up with games, and they sound like the worst goddamn games. He finally like says, I got a new game, we're all going to play it. This is how kids talk. Mm-hmm. This is a new game, we're all going to play it. Here's how it works. You have to mime your dad's job. And if we guess the job, cool. If you guess wrong, you're not in the game. And I'm like, can we watch TV? But okay. So they do this bit, and it turns out it was all just to get under Simon's skin, because he makes Simon play, and Simon doesn't want to, and he says he can't do it. And Ronnie says, here, I'll show you how to be your dad. And he lays on the ground and puts his like hands over his chest, because Simon's dad is dead.
Mm-hmm. How, so he's just, how kind of that
just
child.
Just throwing that back in Simon's face. What a little monster.
Well, it's cruel. It also taps into something that I've never really understood about the way children talk about their fathers in old media. The my dad can beat up your dad thing. Like, mind what your dad does. I take a great deal of pride in what my dad does as a job. We didn't talk about that in as late as... I was a little kid in the 80s.
Yeah.
And we didn't have conversations about what our fathers or even our mothers did for work.
We got a little bit of that. I actually remember...
We never, held it over them. It was never, a point of personal pride for us.
Well,
I went to like a real snotty rich kid's school, so some of my friends' fathers like were movie stars.
Sure.
So that was kind of impressive, because we recognized who those people were, and I don't want to call them out right now. I might have said it's fine. This podcast, but
all I'm going to say is that one of them rhymes with Shmami Moore.
No, we did not. We did not go to school with Demi Moore's children.
Okay, never mind. I just picked someone random.
Okay. but a comedian you might know. Yeah. His daughter went to our school.
Cool.
So that was kind of fun, but that was not something we ever talked about.
Yeah. Well,
so that's, they're playing this party game that not only is kind of twisted because we're making fun of the fact that this child's father is dead, but they're also like weirdly protective about fatherhood.
Yeah.
About their well, dads. I mean, like, what does your dad do? Mime it.
I mean, to be fair, the society has been like decreasingly patriarchal in many ways over the years. In the 1960s, it was still very patriarchal. It's still patriarchal now, but like more pronounced. I understand why there was more of that. We never really felt like a macho thing, because I actually did experience some of that when I was a kid. I saw people, you know, talking about what their parents do, and it was always basically the kids who were super proud of what their parents did had something like, my dad's a firefighter, that kind of thing. And everyone else is like, my dad works at a grocery store.
Or
you
just
win,
the,
I guess.
Or they're,
I don't
they're
know.
Just What's your it? Parents and they're going to do what they do. And,
logically,
and when you're a little kid, you don't really care.
Logically, yes, I agree. I apparently was the only kid, I was the only kid in my preschool whose mom at the time didn't work.
Oh, weird.
And apparently I felt some, I don't remember this, I felt apparently some shame over that.
Oh, weird.
Which is the opposite, like, used to be the cliche, so, you know, I was always weird. and I'm sorry for who I was when I was five, but it was an odd time. Mm.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So they're mean to this kid. They're very, very mean. And it's a horror show, so this is going somewhere.
Well, we know that they're also going to play a game, and they're preparing for it. A game that we used to play at Halloween time. Mm. And that was you put on a blindfold or you just keep your eyes closed, and you reach into a box or a plate that's been prepared.
Yeah.
And you tell a ghost story. And you say, and this is... And they even did this on The Simpsons.
Like, yeah.
An old person, an old guy died, and here's his hair, and you put your hand into a plate of spaghetti.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Here's his severed hand, and it's a rubber glove that's filled with gelatin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And here are his eyes, and it's peeled grapes, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Here are his brains, it's cauliflower.
Yeah.
So we're getting to that eventually.
Fun, visceral, messy game, and they're going to play that. This is a horror show. Guess what's going to happen?
Yeah.
They broadcast it pretty early on.
Yeah. In the meantime, Ronnie's dad comes in, and he is like, oh, I'm sorry I missed so much of the party. Excuse me, I have to put all of these tools upstairs.
Oh, yeah, I got you these gardening tools, like an axe and a shovel and things with sharp edges.
And listen, I probably should put these in, like, the shed or something, but no, we're going to put these upstairs. Meanwhile, Ronnie and the kids are playing a game, which is basically who's the killer, like werewolf or something.
Yeah.
We all kind of go off on our own and have to figure out who the killer is. And Ronnie shoves Simon into a closet and locks it. And when Ronnie's dad, we're back in the kitchen with the two moms, Ronnie's dad goes off to like, okay, I'm going to put all these things up in the upstairs closet, and he walks off, and then the mom and the best friend are just chatting, you're right, very banal. Then you hear kind of a thunk noise, and they're like, oh, what was that? Oh, nothing, probably upstairs. And then they keep chatting, and then the kids play that game, they turn off the lights in the bedroom, or the living room, and like, these are his eyes. And when the lights come on, there's an actual severed hand and an actual eyeball. And it turns out, all the kids freak out, as you can imagine. They run away.
And the adults come in and they're horrified.
Yeah. And when they...
But Simon is not horrified.
Very calm, actually. And so they go... When the mom goes upstairs to see what the... Look for the father, what the hell is going on. She sees that he's, like, half in the closet and he's been murdered. And Simon just walks up to her, nonchalant, cavalier,
like the
totally at peace.
I'm... I don't know how much they exposed the kids to.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they didn't tell him what was going on in the room.
Maybe. Or maybe they did, and this was just the direction. But it was because he says, because you know, he has dialogue that refers to it. He says, well, you know, it's only fair. Now I'm not the only one with a dead father. Which is the bulletproof logic of childhood, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I see how you got there. Let's look over your steps and see where maybe, morally or ethically, you went a little astray. Okay? We're going to have a conversation. I do not want to have to call your mom, Simon. I do not want to have... We're going to talk about this now. Okay. What can we learn from this scenario? Simon? I'm talking to you, Simon. I will call your mom. Okay.
And that's the end of the episode. The roll credits. It's only a 24-minute show.
It's just stinger. Now I'm not the only one with a dead kid. Mom looks horrified. Credits.
Yeah. Set up punchline.
Yeah, yeah. Perfectly efficient.
For a 24-minute episode, there is a lot of padding. The conversation with the adults is interminable.
I don't know, man.
It makes it feel longer than it is.
For me, that actually worked a little bit because it's so short.
Mm.
You know something horrible is going to happen. It's got to. But nothing horrible is happening for so long that they're just priming the pump, right? Every little thing just feels like, oh, he probably shouldn't have gardening tools. I don't know exactly how that's going to play out, but that doesn't seem great. When you hear that one ominous thud off the camera, that just got me. It was like, because the banality makes... The actual terror, even though it's kind of obvious, because you have to sit in it, because you have to wait, it kind of worked for me. I'm not saying it's brilliant cinema or anything but I was on its wavelength.
I understand this whole, you know, banality of evil thing. You see, it's a lot of horror.
It's not even banality of evil, just banality of life all of a sudden intercut with you.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like everything's really... It's really sudden.
Yeah.
The violence comes to a very ordinary place in an unexpected way.
Yeah.
Fine, but I feel like there's a way to do that where the banality is sort of the highlight, and they're doing a little bit more to either presage the violence or, like, foreshadow the violence, or if they're not going to do that, make the banality seem kind of oppressive in a way.
Yeah.
Where the only escape is going to be something dramatic, like violence. Where, if you've ever seen the movie Why Does Herr R. Run Amok? The Fassbender movie.
No, I haven't seen that one.
Ordinary day, oppressive family, and then at the end of the movie, it explodes and kills them all.
Yeah. Bummer.
And that's the movie.
Yeah,
it's more about how, like, the banality kind of wears him down and just... Mm. He explodes and kills them all.
Sure.
The banality doesn't feel... It feels banal. It doesn't feel like it's wearing. There's no point to it other than to depict ordinary British life. And this is what I mean when I understand Monty Python a little bit better. Mm. Because the drama is so stodgy, I feel like Monty Python was trying to send up something, that kind of slow-moving drama.
Yeah.
This is a horror show. People are in it for the horror. They made us wait an awful long time.
Well, I don't know, man. We've watched a lot of horror anthology shows. Some of them British. We watched Hammer House of Horror, for example.
Oh, yeah. And that was Way Out, the Roald Dahl series.
Yeah, that was American, but yeah. We watched A Mistress of Suspense.
Oh, that was a good one. Which was all about... Shirley Jackson stories.
No, Patricia Highsmith.
Or Patricia Highsmith, sorry. It was all just
murderous Patricia Highsmith stories, and it was hosted by Anthony Perkins and had a really good cast. Yeah. That show should not have been forgotten. That one was actually pretty good. But it does feel as though, and this is true when you look at horror stories and horror cinema from other cultures, that everyone's got kind of a different vibe. Even countries that we don't know always think of as terribly dissimilar. You know, like Britain and America. We are very dissimilar, but there are also a lot of obvious similarities. And so we don't necessarily think that there's going to be a lot of differences, but our cinema is very, very different a lot of the time. This is true for any country you go to. You look at their horror movies and you can get on their wavelength. They're probably great. But just the vibe is a little different. And just because a lot of horror is about breaking into the everyday... Mm-hmm. And the everyday is very different from country to country and culture to culture. A lot of this stodgy Britishness, and I don't use stodgy in a pejorative, it's just kind of a sort of an air to it. I don't know. I grew up watching a lot of this stuff, so I guess I'm just keyed into it. I'm kind of with it. Like I'm down. Like you do this and I'm totally cool. So I was fine with it. This episode was directed by a pretty important director, actually. Her name was Patty Russell. She was one of the first women to direct TV on British television. And she directed a lot of it. She did a lot of episodes of Doctor Who, which, because you're Americans, you've heard of. and including one of the most legendary series they ever did, which was Pyramids of Mars. Very recently, in the most recent episode of Doctor Who, did like a huge callback to and like brought back the villain. So she's cemented her place in TV on a couple of different levels. So that's pretty cool. And she did a couple episodes of this, I believe. But yeah, no, I think honestly, this might be another situation, though, where seeing it in black and white probably dulled the edges a little bit, too, because all of a sudden, it's a dark screen, the lights come on, bright red blood.
Yeah.
Probably popped a lot better.
That's fair. That's fair. Because I had to see it in black and white, I imagine a lot of the edge was taken off just aesthetically.
Yeah. I think even when like the lights came on, it took me a second to register exactly what I was looking at.
Okay.
Like, that is an eyeball.
Yeah.
Gross. Well done indeed.
I like the, I mean, once we got to the twist, that's fine.
Sure.
It's a good ghost story.
Yeah.
Like, they used to make fun of him, but then he made fun of them.
More of a campfire story than a ghost story.
Same deal.
Yeah, you tell this story in a campfire. Yeah.
Like, when you only have, like, 20 minutes, it's all set up and payoff, isn't
Pretty
it?
Pretty much, that's yeah. You don't have a lot of...
That's what, Twilight Zone did. That's what, the seasons that weren't an hour.
Yeah, and the ones that were an hour were almost always padded. Like, most of those episodes are pretty drab.
It was just the one season that was an hour long, but yeah. And then they went back to being a half hour.
Because they realized it was a huge mistake. The one that aged really well, though, sadly, is the one where Dennis Hopper played a neo-Nazi.
Oh,
And he started having like, and no one was listening to his white supremacy until he finally started getting like a benefactor who was giving him advice on how to like rile up the crowd. And it wasn't until like halfway through the episode he realized he was talking to the ghost of Hitler. That episode is fucked up.
Wow.
And that episode ends in like Rod Serling giving a speech about why we must do everything we can to stop the rise of authoritarianism and racism and white supremacy in America, because it is very easy to get people riled up and into that mindset, even though you think, oh, we fought the fascists, it'll never happen here. It will fucking happen here, and we should have listened, Rod. More people should have seen that episode.
Well, I mean, wise people did, but a lot of people just wanted the fascists, so we voted them into office. Sorry, America sucks.
Yeah, it really does.
We know it does. Yeah. We're not happy about
we're not
it
proud.
Either.
We are not. We're and, not. We're deeply and, ashamed,
and,
actually.
And now the fascists are appointing, like...
Okay. You know what? I don't want to
get off
that
on
a rabbit hole. Turn into a thing. Sorry.
Some of the other episodes you have to look up online. So we read about them.
We've got descriptions. The first episode, let's talk about them. And I know the plot of one of... We actually know the plot of two of these because they're kind of famous short stories.
Well, they got some good writers. The first episode was written by Richard Matheson.
Yes, and it's based on a Richard Matheson story.
Yeah, one of the masters of horror, Richard Matheson. He did a lot of Twilight Zone episodes as well.
He did Terror, 20,000 Feet?
Nightmare
at 20,000 Feet, which is one of the great horror stories of the 20th century.
He also wrote, Incredible Shrinking Man and I Am Legend. Like, he's a deal.
Just an incredible...
And the second episode was done by Roald Dahl.
Let's talk about that episode, though. Let's just do one at a time. But yeah, Roald Dahl did one as well. The first one's called No Such Thing as a Vampire. The description that's on Wikipedia reads, Alexis, the wife of Dr. Cheria, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, mysteriously falls ill. It's believed by the villagers that she is the victim of a vampire. One night, she awakes screaming with blood running from two marks down her neck. And there's a twist there. It's pretty implausible, but it is kind of fun in a very quick in and out vampire horror story kind of way. But the next one, we've actually reviewed this one before, kind of, because it's called William and Mary, and it is a Roald Dahl story that was in Way Out.
This was the Mortician episode.
It was the Brain episode.
The, It
was the one where he... Okay, so there's a guy who has discovered a way to keep your brain alive after you die.
Oh, right, right, yes. Yeah, yes.
It's keeping your brain alive after you die, but it's just your brain. So all you can do is sort of experience things. And we'll keep like your eyes, but like that's it. Your body will not live. And he tries to convince this guy to go for the procedure. And this guy is an asshole. He's been very terrible to his wife their entire lives. He's just been really just condescending and emotionally abusive and kept her from doing anything she ever wanted to do. But he goes for it. And at the end, she embraces it and just forces him to watch her be free. Like, just to watch her, like, spend his money and do things he never would have let her do and she knows infuriate him. It's great. It's such a mean little story. It's so good. The next one was The Corpse Can't Play. That was the third episode. The fourth episode was called The Triumph of Death. Great title. I think it's the title of a painting. Miss Pendleham has resided in a crumbling Elizabethan mansion. Mansion? What?
Pendulum.
It's not spelled pendulum. But
no, but you said it in a very American way. Oh, it's like saying the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Well, I thought maybe I would articulate it so you'd understand how it was like written, but all right, fine. Mrs. Pendulum has resided in a crumbling Elizabethan mansion for many years with rumors that the mansion is haunted. And that one's vague.
Yeah.
You could do anything with that.
Triumph of Death is a Bruegel. Bruegel the Elder.
Yeah. Good old Bruegel. Bruegel the Younger. Little underrated, I feel.
It's like Elizabethan-era artist, Bruegel the Elder.
Sure. What was the episode of Blackadder where Blackadder was trying to find, like, new employment, and he was looking at the want ads, and it was like, Pitt the Elder seeks babysitter for Pitt the Younger. Which was a good joke.
1562, Triumph of Death was painted.
All right, I don't know if it's...
I had to look that up, but...
Yeah. I don't know if maybe the painting relates to it, maybe it's an inspiration, maybe it's a plot point, maybe it's just a good title. I do not know, but that's the only connection I have with that one, because that setup is so goddamn vague. The next episode, great title, The Bells of Hell.
Hell's Bells.
After 3 months of marriage, Fryn and Gerald Banstead stay at the Bell Inn, a picturesque pub in East Anglia. When they arrive, the place seems to be all but deserted, apart from the lonely sound of a church bell. Which is nice and ominous. That sets a mood in a couple of sentences. I have no idea where
like
that's going either.
The opening to the short story. When they arrive, the place seems to be all but deserted.
I mean, that's a perfectly good opening sentence to a short story. It's a little fast, but like, you know, it's creepy. Your imagination gets going. And then the last episode is called The Kiss of Blood, which is based on a Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story. Lady Sannox is one of the most beautiful and richest women in London. She becomes a mistress of Douglas Stone, an eminent surgeon. Which is great, because preeminent surgeons aren't there yet.
It's before their eminence.
Right.
They're preeminent.
Yeah, right? Her husband, Lord Sannox, watches this affair and seeks his swift revenge.
I don't know this Arthur Conan Doyle story, so yeah. I don't know what the swift revenge is.
I think
is.
It involves poison, and it's like, you know,
the kiss of blood.
I know there like was... I never read it, but I read about it a long time ago.
There was a Tales from the Crypt episode where... A woman was married to sort of a stodgy surgeon who was like always experimenting in his lab. She started having an affair with one of the lesser Baldwins. It was like William Baldwin.
So most of the Baldwins, to be fair.
We have Alec and then we have the sub Baldwins. And he caught them having an affair. He kept on hearing them, like he heard through the walls them saying, "I want your body, I want your body." So of course he drugged them both and transposed their heads. So they could have each other's bodies, you see.
Cute.
Yeah.
Did it work? Like, was this a successful head transplant?
One of the final shots was they were both, like, awake and aware and had each other's bodies.
It was gruesome either way, I suppose.
Some pretty rudimentary green screen effects, but, you know,
Okay. Did the episode end with them saying, You take things very literally, don't you?
No, they were just shocked, and then they cut to the crypt keeper.
Well, I mean, after the shock wears off, you have a conversation, I think. It's like, let's see where we went down the wrong path, shall we? Because communication could solve a lot of these problems. Mm. I digress. That's it. The hunt for episodes of this show continues. You know, still hope. Maybe someday we'll find some of the other five. There are pictures of some of the episodes in color, so you can at least get a sense of it. You can see the opening credits in color online. But the opening credits are pretty kind of abstract. It's just like, here's a scary head. Neat. So there's that. These like collectors have been trying to like track down the show, and they felt this one episode like popped up on the collector's market in like the early 80s, and they missed it, and whoever bought it was a mystery, and then it just popped up again, and no one knows where it went in the interim. But it was rediscovered. It was released on home video, which is nice. It is readily available. You can find it online as well. And now we have it. And it's one of those things where apparently the legend of late night horror might have been a little better than the show itself, because it was missing for so long, because there were those rumors that it was like people had it canceled because it was too scary for television, that kind of thing.
Well, when we watched Crybaby Lane, we found that it was actually a pretty good show. It was a pretty good special. I'm not getting that vibe from this one. It's difficult to say because they're all done by different directors.
Or at least a couple. I think Patty Russell did two. Patty Russell also did the Richard Matheson one, No Such Thing as a Vampire. But yeah, mostly,
And it's also difficult to gauge because there's no Rod Serling. There's no Crypt Keeper. There's no
through line.
There's no bookend material. It would be nice to have had some kind of intro.
Yeah.
I understand the anthology shows don't need them necessarily, but
I think it helps give your anthology show a personality, because otherwise you're just throwing stories out there, which you don't need a show to do.
So without that introduction and having just one episode to go by, I can't get a line on this show.
Yeah.
If they're all going to be as slow moving and as urbane as this one, then I'm not interested.
Right.
But I can't say that for sure because I only have the one. So all I can judge it on and all I can extrapolate the show on is from what I've seen.
So Whitney Seibel, and was it canceled too soon?
No. Aww. Because if this is my only thing I can judge it by, then no. I'm interested in seeing other stories, the Richard Matheson story, the Roald Dahl story, the Conan Doyle story. These all sound like interesting tales.
Right.
I'd be interested to see one of those to back up my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to admit, though, that my opinion is uninformed.
Yeah, no, this is all we have. This is all the context we've got. And that's why it's so interesting. It's one of the reasons why the show is so fascinating. I'm of two minds on it. On one hand, I mean, I liked the episode, but it's not a particularly remarkable episode. This could have been an episode of anything. This could have been an episode of Way Out. This could have been an episode of Hammer House of Horror. Probably need to be padded for that one, but, you know, because that was like an hour long, but still. So that's fine. It's not amazing. I agree. Giving the show some personality, giving the show a narrator or a crypt keeper or just something to justify it would have been great in giving it personality. The reason why I am hesitant to say that it wasn't canceled too soon is because even this episode, we're not seeing it right. And I feel like it's probably safe to say, whether or not it would have made a huge difference or not, that watching this episode in color in the late 60s, where all of a sudden, boom, in your face, bright red gore, would have had a very different impact.
Yeah.
So,
especially in the late 60s.
I'm thinking about at the time, not just now. So at the time... I mean, I'm thinking about these other episodes, and it's like, there's so much you can do, so much you can actually, like, pioneer in the horror genre if you're one of the first people on television to do it in color, and because you're on late night, you have the freedom to be gross.
Mm-hmm.
So I am going to cautiously, and not like full-throatedly, but like, you know, just err on the side of caution and say this may have been canceled too soon.
Okay.
give it
the benefit of the doubt.
I'm going to give it a little benefit of the doubt because it's definitely not bad. But we can't see exactly how it was supposed to make its impact.
Yeah.
And based on what we have seen and the stills that I've seen of like the gore in this episode, I think it probably would have worked better. Okay. In color. So if that were the case, and if the mandate was we're going to play with color and do things in color we haven't done on television, that's exciting, and I would like to see more of that. So cautiously, canceled too soon.
Okay.
That is it for canceled too soon. If you saw the rest of this show...
If you're one of those rare kids, and you're definitely a horror author now,
as
I posited.
But, like, no, because, like, this was on the late 60s, and I know we have some listeners in that age range who could theoretically have seen it.
Mm.
If you did, we would love to hear from you. Our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. Whitney, what is our P.O. Box?
Yeah, send us a physical letter to the Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
I would also like to hear from you if you, because this is actually new. I actually only just, to me, I only just found out about this a couple of weeks ago. If this is one of those, like, sort of urban legend-y kind of shows where you had heard the tales of, like, oh, late night horror. Yeah, it was this show that was too scary for TV. And you want to tell us, like, what that was, what, like, the rumor mill was like?
Yeah.
Directly, I would be very curious to hear that as well. Long shot, I realize, but it'd be cool if you knew. So let us know. That is it for Cancel Too Soon. We will be back next week with something I suggested before we started recording the episode, that we announce what we're going to do next time, because that's what we always do. And Whitney Seibold was like, what if we didn't? And I was like...
We'll leave them in suspense a little bit.
I guess. Mm. I don't know. We did have to backtrack on what we said we were going to do next time. So maybe this is my karmic punishment. I'm just OCD enough that this bugs me. Like, this feels wrong to me somehow.
It's kind of disheartening when we make a big announcement and then we can't find it, or schedule gets in the way. We have to pivot.
It doesn't happen that often.
So I'd like to give us a little leeway this week, just in case.
You know what? We once bitten, twice shy, right? Mm. So, but we will be back with more of this stuff that we do on Cancel Too Soon. Thank you, buddy, for listening. Thank you once again. Please subscribe on Patreon if you haven't already. You get to listen to episodes ad-free. You get to vote for future episodes of stuff like The Iron List. We have commentary tracks, our Oscars podcast, our Star Trek podcast, which we are very, very close to finally getting to Deep Space Nine. Like, before the end of the year, or right at the end of the year, pretty much.
We're like... three episodes away.
Only three episodes.
From Emissary. Yeah.
And I think we've decided that for funsies, we're going to post the first episode of Deep Space Nine on the main feed.
Yeah.
But give everyone an opportunity to listen to what we're doing and you know, try it out. So that's something to look forward to. I'm certainly excited about it. That's been my favorite Star Trek show for a long time, and I can't wait. I never thought we'd get there. I thought we'd burn out.
DS9.
Oh my god! It's like my marriage and then the Star Trek podcast. Those are like the two things, the longest commitments I've ever made. Again, thank you to all of our patrons. We couldn't do it without you. If you want to join up, it's patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. Whitney and I are both off of Twitter, basically.
Twitter's dead to me. Yeah. But I am on Blue Sky. I'm still haven't given up all the socials.
Yeah.
I also have an Instagram account where I post complete nonsense.
Yeah. So, every Friday you post the same Garfield panel. Where is it John who says Friday again, Garfy baby?
Yeah.
He just says Friday again, Garfy baby.
Hmm.
And that's kind of Whitney's whole identity over there, and I love him for that.
It's a lot of Garfield over on my Instagram for whatever reason.
Final
old pictures on my phone that make no sense, and I post those.
But we are both on Blue Sky. I'm at William Bibiani. He's at Whitney Seibold, and Critically Acclaimed is over there too. So give us a follow, give us a listen. Yeah. Leave Twitter forever. They're fucking awful over there. Every once in a while, I just accidentally by reflex.
Oh, like sign into Twitter.
Yeah, like I mean Blue Sky, but they're similar enough that in my head I just accidentally write down like TW. And I know they changed it, but it still redirects from Twitter, so I was never going to change that. And I look up and I see like the first two posts and I'm like, this is why I left. I hate this place. Like even the positivity is negative over there. It's so awful.
Even when it's like people who are trying to, like, inform you. It's like, no, it's just Wrath.
Yeah.
It's Wrath. It's worse than 4chan.
Deeply
it's,
unpleasant.
It's always... It would always
worse than 4chan, but it's become 4chan, basically.
It always was a sewer, and now it's a sewer with Nazis in it. And
most of the good people aren't really engaging with it. And in fact, Twitter is, like, plummeted. And, like, I think...
In terms of usage?
Well, like, earlier today, like, apparently, like, the number one app... like new like social media app was Blue Sky today, and Twitter had like fallen down to like 30.
Oh wow!
Which is like but it's a cool place to be. There's a lot of great people there, and it's very active.
Super queer, I love that.
Very queer, very positive. So anyway, we're not brought to you by Blue Sky. We're just saying why we're there, and you can join us if you'd like, and we're over there. But that's it. That's the show. Again, thank you everybody. You're awesome. Wonderful to see you. We'll see you again soon. And that's a wrap. And we will see you not just soon, but next season. I made that weird.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.